Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'd like to ask you, do you know any children who have had near-death experiences? Maybe not, but maybe you're wondering about some of them because of their behaviors and just don't know why. And that might be why. So we're going to find out so much about what happens when children have near-death experiences. Very young children, even at birth or before, what happens to them? And it's very exciting. We're going to talk with an amazing researcher who has really researched thousands of near-death experiencers and so many children, and has gotten it straight from them, what happened to them. So we're going to find out. We're now going to talk with the author of this great book, The Forever Angels, PMH Atwater. PMH, welcome to Energy Stew.
Hi, good to see you, all of you.
Right. I'm excited. I hope the audience is excited too, because this is a subject matter that very few people are familiar with, to the point where, in a way, you're breaking new ground, right?
Yeah, well, that's the story of my life. I've been doing that for a long time.
Right, but about
children. But with children, yeah, this is different, yes.
Yeah, and I've done shows about children who have had NDEs with Melvin Morse, and it's fascinating information, but you took it to another level.
Absolutely.
You wanted to find out not only what their experiences were, if they could tell you, but what happened to them subsequent to
their absolutely what their lives were like. Yes.
Right. And their lives were often extremely different than most, right?
Yes, very, very different.
Right. And talking with you before the show, I learned from reading your book and talking with you that my brother and I, twins, both were born as blue babies. And blue babies often have a near-death struggle at birth. If not a pure near-death experience, could be something close to it because of the difficulty in supporting our lives at the beginning stage. A blue baby has a heart defect. And my brother and I both have right bundle branch blocks that we were born with. So that probably contributed to it.
That could well be. But in the book, The Forever Angels, there are markers. Those traits that you can just go right down the list and find out whether or not you match or come close, and you can tell fairly quickly if they had a near-death experience or something like a near-death experience, because they're very, very different. You know, 90% of them don't bond with their parents. Believe that. 90% of the kids who have near-death experiences do not bond with their parents. That doesn't mean they don't love them. They don't bond to them. They bond to the beings on the other side. Not this side.
Well, we actually, my brother and I had an unusual experience, because when we were 1.5, our father went off to war. And so we ended up needing our mother more, and she needed us more. And so there was a bonding there. But when our father came back, he kind of disrupted that. And then he died when we were teenagers. So there were these issues, but we also, my brother and I, had each other, and that was, and
that makes a big difference.
Yeah, that's a twin thing, and
we were, mom is there, but you've got your brother.
Yes,
and the two of you can go to different worlds, different places, know different things. Yeah, you could be very different.
Well, we were very bonded for so much of our early lives. And couldn't help it, you know, and yet in our teenage years and after that, we found our own ways, but we're still very close. Yeah. And we both have had very unusual lives, very existential and different. And I've always been very different. And that's why, for instance, I'm doing a radio show called Energy Stew.
Yeah, it fits you perfectly.
Yeah, but I was so happy to read this book because you really helped explain me to myself, because there are so many traits that I've had, both good and bad.
I wouldn't say bad, different.
Well, what I say by bad is that it was often difficult for so many people to appreciate.
Oh my goodness. In school, friendship, growing up, jobs.
And relationships.
Heavy on relationships. You're just not like.
Right.
The crowd. You don't fit.
Well, luckily I found a wife, my third wife, finally I found a fit with, who I've been with for almost 40 years. And
wonderful.
She's very spiritual. I'm sure she didn't have an NDE. But she's very talented and leads moon circles and, you know, does a lot of yoga.
She understands you and she's open to you.
Well, she's willing to be married to me anyway. but we were both extremely spiritual, so it really does fit both our needs.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Absolutely.
So this is very exciting. I'm so thrilled to talk with you because not only for myself, but for so many people who are listening, because I'm sure I attract a lot of very unusual people to the audience. And they might be wondering about themselves. And we're talking about people who, children who have had near-death experiences in the womb, at birth, between, you know.
As a toddler, up to the age of 5.
Right.
Yes.
And you've researched, you've had many people actually send you life stories on their own, and then you would interview them and they would explain.
Well, please bear in mind, the Forever Angels is really two studies all in one. In the 80s and 90s is when I first started researching children. And, you know, at that time, I set my goal between birth and the age of 15 years. But most of the people that I worked with had their near-death experience between birth and the age of 7. So when I really took a look at the numbers, I had the biggest jump, the biggest amount between birth and 15 months and between 3 years and 5 years. So it fits. I can take that group and I can compare that with this new group. Now that group, I was working with people, kindergarten up to young adults, mostly. So they were forward looking. With this second group, I went after the older ones, people in their 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s who could verify having had a near-death experience between birth and the age of 5. And I just opened it up. I was asking for essays. And I said, you know, did this early near-death experience make any difference in your life? If it did, tell me about it. So I wanted to know parents, siblings, teachers, sports, friends, sex, drugs, alcohol, dating, all the growing years, maturity. Did they have any problems with that? Marriages, children of their own. And so that way I had a backward looking group. So the first group was forward looking. The second group could go back then and with more mature eyes and more mature feelings say, whoa, you know, this is what happened over time. So we can take the long view. And there's no other study like it in the world, no other books about it in the world, because nobody else has done it. Nobody else has taken the long view. So that's what I did. And I'll tell you, you know, in the past, everybody, you and me, everybody, we look at children and we just are so touched by their stories. It's we all suffer from what I call out of the mouth of babes syndrome. You know, we're just so touched by these stories. But then, who goes back 5 years later, 10 years later, 20 years later, and find out what's happening to these people? Nobody goes back. Nobody that I know of, except maybe 5 years, 10 years, that's about it. I went back all the way. And in doing that, and in inviting them to show me, I asked them to draw a picture of their experience, you know, the case studies, the experience itself. Draw me a picture of your experience. Many did. So there's lots of drawings in the book. But I wanted to know for real, for absolute real, how did this really experience you? How did this affect you over time? And when I was saying, you know, out of the mouth of babe syndrome, when these kids grow up, it's a very, very different story. And what I'm finding is that they never really fully acclimated into the earth plane. At least most of them didn't. Some did, but most of them didn't. They're still attached or somehow involved or still part of where they were before.
Right.
You know, most of them didn't have a before.
That's a very important, is that there's no perspective.
Yeah.
They, change.
They can't compare.
Right.
So they
just are.
They grow up not knowing what a human being is. Because they're still over there.
Right.
So to find out, that's tough.
Right. And I was automatically drawn to an existential lifestyle, as my brother was too. And we didn't know why. And it was amazing the places we ended up. My brother went into the Peace Corps, and right after that, it became a Buddhist monk in Thailand in saffron robes and a shaved head. And this is in the 1960s. And that was really far out. And who would have thought? Certainly, it didn't last that long because we find out that a lot of child NDRs are sensitive to foods, and he certainly couldn't handle the kind of crazy foods he had to eat. Begging with wooden bowl in villages in the mornings, and couldn't last that long because it made him unhealthy.
And yeah, I have a lot of health things that I invite people to really look at, and take a really long look at medicines and all this kind of thing with children. Especially, you know, if a child's had a near-death experience, you don't want them out in the heat of the day when it's really, really sunny, doing a lot of practice. It's great in the morning, and you know, later in the day and the evening, that's just fine. But most near-death experiencers come back with light sensitivity. All kinds of different kinds of sensitivities. You have to be really careful with these kids.
I've had very strong sound sensitivities.
Yeah, definitely sound sensitivity as well. Light sensitivity, Right.
Yeah. And also, there are so many aspects of this. It just goes on and on, like, you know, choosing partners and the kinds of people we are attracted to or who are attracted to us.
Right. Right.
You know, we're different. And, you know, I'm really owning this. I never had before because I never understood it before. I never equated it with being a blue baby. And now I understand that, you know, I've always been fascinated by the beyond and feel really like, yeah, of course, the other side is home. I know that. And not that I want to.
You've got abuse issues, you've got drownings, you've got high fever, you've got birth difficulties like you had. These are the kind of arenas that that child experiencers bloom from. That's where they begin to open up, is when you get children in abuse issues and drownings and this kind of, they're more apt to have a near-death experience than the average child. And, you know, one of the things I've seen decades now is invariably, if a child is being abused or if they're frightened or if they're hurting, they'll have what you and I would call an out-of-body experience. They simply go up to the ceiling or high in the sky, that to them is a safety issue. It has nothing to do with being psychic, has nothing to do with being intuitive. It has everything to do with a safety issue because they're safe up there. They can look down at the body then and see all the things that are going on, but they're safe. The mind is safe. The soul is safe. They're safe up there.
Right. You know, and I do believe that there is the other side is free.
And it's very helpful to kids.
But I've never been a busy astral traveler. I've had one or two experiences in time travel and in visiting my mother from the other side. But I really love to dwell on past lifetimes and other planets and understand that we live in a very complex, sophisticated universe that we know very little about, but it's full of the opportunity for exploration.
Well, some of these kids fall into that.
Right.
You'll see that in the book.
Sure.
There are some that remember past lives and drew pictures of what it was like. But the majority Peter are very different. They really challenge that because they're more into the life continuum. They're very much a part of the life continuum. And they view that as being a stream. And this stream, they'll take a dip once in a while, that's a life, and then they come right back. Then they take another dip, that's another life, and then they come right back. It's a stream that they're a part of, this life stream, this life continuum.
Soul journey.
Right.
I love that. And we could talk so much.
We'll be talking forever about that kind of thing.
Yeah, because it's so much a part of who I am.
But you know, adults take about 7 to 10 years to integrate their experience. Child experiencers take 20 to 40, some of them 50.
Right, because they're not sophisticated enough to know how to have the perspective to try to balance it.
Right. A child will either, they're processing this, but they compensate in their life. They'll change their life around in ways that seem somehow to fit, but they don't understand how to fit what happened to them into the world around them. So they don't really have any perspective.
And they're not grounded.
No, many of them are not grounded. They don't have that perspective.
Right.
So they view life very, very differently than you and I would, or maybe not you, but I would.
Well, also probably a lot of our audience.
They have a high degree of suicide ideation because they don't feel like they fit here. They don't know how to fit here. They fit in as best they can. I mean, these are smart kids, very smart. I've got, over 70% really did very, very well with their lives. Some of them became millionaires, but they never got over that idea of homesickness. They never got over that idea of not fitting well here, and that idea of wanting to go back. This is a woman, she's 86 years old, still wanting to go back. Never got over homesickness. We talk about PTSD. I have a whole chapter in the book on PTSD. So any counselors who are listening to this show or watching it, or therapists or psychologists, read that chapter. Because it seems as if, they might have PTSD. Certainly that idea of wanting to go back, please understand, everybody, that a child's mind doesn't work like an adult mind. Even when they're older, they still don't work like an adult mind. And a child does not look at suicide as being harmful. They don't look at it as being...
No, they see it as going home.
No, they're just going over there.
Yeah, right. Right.
They don't look at it the same way.
Yeah.
So to them, it's not an awful thing.
Yeah, I've never wanted that because I really love my life in so many ways because I'm really taking advantage of it.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I hope a lot of people are able to get the Forever Angels and realize how they fit. Right. And they're absolutely normal.
Right.
Really, really normal.
But different.
Different but normal.
I love it. And so I'm so glad, to have this experience of reading your book and understanding so much that you offer. Do you have a website or what?
Oh yes, my website is www.pmhatwater.com. Just pmhatwater.com. And be sure that you get into the newsletter section. And I offer a free monthly newsletter. So sign up, come aboard.
Really?
I tell everybody it's a newsletter for the curious. So never know what's going to be in it.
Right. Now that's terrific. Because you have other books too that you've written, and you have
18 of them. This is the 18th one.
Oh my gosh!
Remember, I'm one of the original researchers in the field of near-death studies. Right. I began my work in 1978. I became a researcher because I died myself 3 times in 3 months in 1977. I look back at that, what I went through, and I call it the heavenly sledgehammer effect. If that doesn't tell you what I went through or how stubborn I was beforehand, I don't know what will. And in my third near-death experience, I was told by the voice like none other, and I don't mean a guardian, I don't mean an angel, I don't mean any of those kinds of things. This is a voice that was so big. It's like it covered and filled the entire universe. And that voice said to me that I was to do this research. It said to test revelation. You are to do the research. One book for each death. And it explained, you know, what it was talking about. Book number one was not named. I don't know which one it was. Book number two was, that's future memory. Book number three, a manual for developing humans. So those two books are very, very special. You know, if you want something that will really challenge your mind, you want future memory. That's a labyrinth. It's not a book. Every sentence, every paragraph, every page in that book is part of the math I use to create the labyrinth. It is a real labyrinth. A manual for developing humans has a fifth dimensional format. So, yeah, very, very different kind of book. Back in the day, who knows, hundreds of years ago, maybe several thousand years, I don't know, long ago, the word or the sound of hue was the sound of God. And so human meant God man. Yeah, I mean, even in the Bible, it says we are gods in the making.
And hue stands for full spectrum. Also, H-U-E.
We're full of that. So
great. We're really at the end of the show now.
Okay, to be all that you are, get the manual.
We'll have to talk again sometime soon. This is so wonderful to talk to you.
Oh, it's been fun.
Thank you, Peter. Website. Thank you. Thanks.
Bye, everybody.
Paige. Thank you for being an Energy Stew. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver.org. I'd love to hear from you, and thanks so much for listening. Thank you.